Hello. Welcome back to those of you who weren't here last time. No, welcome back to those of you who were here. And thank you for joining us for those of you who were not here. So I just did a session on building a successful step family, and now we're going to talk about co-parenting with confidence. So this is all about a co-parent that, I guess I should say, a former spouse or an ex-spouse who you are co-parenting with. And we're going to talk about the dynamics of that. But before we get started, I'm going to pray, and then we're going to roll right in. Thank you, Heavenly Father, for the opportunity to be in your house and for the information that you provide. I just ask that my words be your words, Father, as we talk about co-parenting. It can be a hot topic, Lord, and we want to handle it with grace and with care, and we want to be servants and humble hearts as we learn to better be in relationship with a co-parent. So thank you for those who have joined us. We just ask the Holy Spirit to be part of our conversation today. In Jesus' name I pray, amen. My name is Gayla Grace. I serve on staff with Family Life Blended. It is a department within Family Life. So we are based out of Little Rock, Arkansas. I live in Conway and drove over yesterday. And I'm just so thankful to see you here. So those of you that are here, I'm assuming you have a former spouse who you are co-parenting with, and just we're going to talk about different ways to have strong co-parenting relationships. It's a very important piece of blended family life. It can be really hard. And so we want to talk about how to make that better, how to improve the relationship, how to do your part, what that looks like. So my husband and I, Randy, have been married 28 years, and we both came into our marriage with an ex-spouse. So I was married and divorced. I was married 11 years. My first husband was a medical student when we married, and he was going to medical school, and I just, you know, we were going to be a married family. He was going to do the doctor thing. We were going to have kids together and live happily ever after, and life would be good. But it didn't turn out that way. Training for medical practice is very stressful. And he chose to go the route of addiction to handle with his stress and began with alcoholism, moved into prescription drugs, which as a physician are pretty easy to get your hands on. And so addiction was a part of that story that was really, really hard. And there's some very dark years back there as I tried to understand what to do when relapse after relapse occurred. And I was raised in a very stable, traditional family. That's how I wanted to raise my girls. And I began to see that just wasn't going to happen in this home. Divorce wasn't something that you did in my family. My parents were married 65 years before my mom died, and yet I walked through divorce. And so I've carried a lot of shame and guilt and the stigma of divorce. I get it. It's a big deal. But it is the reality is part of our story for some of us. And we serve a big God who is a redemptive God and continues to walk with us whatever our story is. And I've learned a lot, though, in learning how to co-parent with someone, with my former spouse and also my husband's former spouse. He also had been married about 11 years and walked through divorce. And so he had two kids that were 5 and 10 when we married, and my girls were 3 and 5. And then we had a child together 6 years later. So his, hers, and ours family, lots of big, messy stuff that has gone on in our family. But we've made it. And I want to help y'all have a good story that has a good ending also. And some of that includes this co-parenting piece. So did you know that there is a designated ex-spouse day? Anybody heard of that? An ex-spouse day. Do y'all want to celebrate ex-spouse day? What does that feel like? I see it in your eyes. I agree. When somebody told me that, I went, does that mean I'm celebrating my ex-spouse? I mean, seriously? But here's the thing. It's April the 14th, in case you want to put it on your calendar, in case you want to celebrate that day. It was actually created by a minister, though, in 1987 to encourage those who have dissolved their marriage to forgive their former spouse and move beyond any anger or bitterness. And I guess if you think about it that way, it could be a good reason to celebrate. But I don't know about y'all. I'm still not going to celebrate. That's up to you. But you know, here's the reality. An ex-spouse is kind of like an in-law. I mean, you have in-laws in your family. Maybe you have a mother-in-law, a father-in-law. For me, I have two son-in-laws. You know, in-laws are just kind of people who come into the family and they're part of the family. We really kind of have to think about a former spouse as an in-law. They're part of the family whether we want them there or not. And we have to figure out how to interact with them. We have to figure out how to be in relationship with them. So I told you a little bit about my story. And because of my struggle and his addiction, I really had a hard time seeing him in a positive light. I had a hard time forgiving him. I felt like his behavior was not worth forgiveness. That's not right. God showed me differently. But in the beginning, I carried some unforgiveness. And as a result of that, I didn't co-parent well because I had this just huge gap between us. And so I had a lot of resentment, and that showed up in our co-parenting relationship. And so I'm going to talk about forgiveness a little further down the way, but I just want you to think about things that could be impacting your co-parenting relationship and what your part is and maybe what behavior you need to take that could improve your co-parenting relationship. And the biggest one for me was I needed to forgive my former spouse. But we're going to get started with the goals of co-parenting, and we're going to start by 5 categories of co-parents. So there was a study done by the National Institute of Mental Health by Dr. Constance Ahrens. You may have heard of her. She has a book called The Good Divorce. She has twice divorced herself, and she wanted to understand better how to still raise her kids in a healthy way. And in this research by the National Institute of Mental Health, she came up with 5 categories of co-parents. So as I go through these, I want you to think about yourself and your former spouse and identify what kind of co-parent you are. All right, the first one, perfect pals. They still call themselves very good friends. They talk with each other once or twice a week. They plan things together. Sometimes they get together without the children. They may have occasional arguments, but they don't really result in big disputes. Perfect pals stay well connected with each other's extended families, perhaps even spending holidays together. Usually they have joint custody of kids. It's common for couples to follow this type of relationship early after a divorce. And then it might change, it might grow more distant, though still friendly as time passes. Perfect pals, that's the first one. Cooperative colleagues is the second one. Cooperative colleagues are divorced parents who cooperate and consult with each other about the children, but they don't have a personal relationship with their ex-spouse anymore. They compartmentalize their relationship. So everything, every conversation that goes on has to do with the kids. It's not in regards to a personal relationship that is going on. They try to share parenting of the children. They're able to compromise in dividing up the holidays. They talk often, always about the children, possibly extended family, but not about their personal lives or feelings. They don't have a personal relationship with each other separate from the concerns of the children. These are cooperative colleagues. They have the ability to compartmentalize. They don't confuse the issues connected to their marital relationship or maybe the stuff back here in the past that might still be unresolved. They are able to keep that separate. And any communication has to do with the kids. Cooperative colleagues. Number 3, angry associates. These co-parents tend to feel angry most of the time. They have an argument when they have to talk to each other about plans for the children. Instead of being able to compartmentalize their anger about the past, they let it spread into related and even non-related issues. They just are kind of on the edge all the time in relation to each other. They talk to each other at least every couple of months, sometimes once or twice a week. They make joint decisions about the children, but they struggle to have a cooperative attitude with each other. It's not uncommon for angry associates to move on to the next step with just fiery foes, or they might take a step back to cooperative colleagues. So we often don't stay in the same category forever. We might move into one category or another, and that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to identify which one of these we want to be in and how we can get there. So angry associate. Number four, fiery foes. These co-parents rarely talk to each other. And when they do, they argue or they're angry with each other. Their divorces tended to be high litigious. Their legal battles often continued for many years after the divorce. They don't want to see each other. They avoid contact as much as possible. They can't work out arrangements for the children without having an argument. They actually have to rely on a third party most of the time to settle their disagreements. A lawyer, a friend, a child. We never want it to be a child that has to get in the middle of this. But fiery foes tend to exchange children without saying a word. That's hard on kids to see. It's really hard on kids to see. Dissolve duos. They completely discontinue contact with each other. One parent usually disappears from the children's life altogether. They just can't handle any kind of a relationship. They will probably move out of state, and it becomes a single-parent home or a home with a step-parent, and the co-parenting just becomes non-existent. Dissolved duos. This is sad for kids, too. It's really best for kids to stay involved with their biological parent in one way or another. I struggled with that with my ex-spouse. I didn't feel like it was safe for my girls to have a relationship with him, and I did put some boundaries in place to where it was supervised visitation only. My girls have never spent more than 24 hours with him, and that was what needed to happen. But I did know that they needed to have some kind of a relationship with their dad. And so, all right, let's talk. Perfect pals, cooperative colleagues, angry associates, fiery foes, dissolved duos. Who wants to be brave enough to tell me where you're at? Anybody? Just shout it out. No judgment. There's no judgment here. We're just going to talk about where you think you're at, and then we're going to talk about where we really want to be at and how we might get there.
Back and forth from angry associates to fiery foes.
Okay. Thank you for your honesty. I mean, that's part of it sometimes, isn't it? That's a hard place to be, though, isn't it? Yeah, it's hard on your kids. How old are your kids?
He's 12.
He's 12. Okay.
But we have two together, and she has one. But from my ex-spouse, we have the 12-year-old.
Okay. So that's the one. That's the co-parent that you're dealing with, that you're talking about. Yeah. Okay. All right. Who else? Who else has a ex-spouse they want to tell us what their category is? Two and four. So you go back and forth between cooperative colleagues and fiery foes. So you just skip the angry associate and just jump right into. Okay, so you kind of come back and forth. Okay. Have you been able to identify what might help you stay in the cooperative colleagues? Or maybe that's why you're here today, so we can figure this out. That is very interesting. So life events as in?
A new baby, someone got fired at a job, and there's some stress, you know, with their relationship at home.
Right.
Or our relationship at home. That's what it seems to be.
Okay. The undercurrents then are contributing to this relationship. And that's not unusual. That's some additional stress. We talked about this in the workshop last time. That's additional stress, and it does impact everybody. And so you go back and forth. Yeah. Well, good for you, though, that you're able to at least recognize you're not stuck in one category and kind of goes back and forth, and you can be in better categories sometimes than others. Yeah. Okay, good. Anybody else want to tell me? Or do you want to take a guess at where you think we want to be as co-parents? Anybody want to take a guess at that? Perfect pals, cooperative colleagues, angry associates, fiery foes, dissolved duos. I mean, you're bound to know that three of them are not good. So it's one or two, right? Number two, you're exactly right. The perfect pals sounds like it's this great place to be, but the truth is it's confusing for the kids. If we get along that great with our ex-spouse, why aren't we still married? I mean, seriously, how can we be such great friends? And now I know some families do have holidays together, but y'all, that's not me. It never happened. If that can happen, and if you get along well enough with the family and your ex-spouse, that's great. I commend you. And it's really, I mean, I want to say it is helpful for the kids, but the kids do need to see that this relationship is dissolved. You're not still in a love relationship with this former spouse. So perfect pals, no. Cooperative colleagues, yes. And so in order to get to cooperative colleagues, we have to identify what's contributing to the, you know, moving to some of these other categories that are, we know are not good, what's contributing to it. How can we get out in front of that? How can we identify? And sometimes you can't. Sometimes a job loss happens overnight. Sometimes things change in homes and we can't control that. But if there is a life event, marriage is another big one. We've been through two marriages in our stepfamily, and let me tell you, those are stressful when you've got the stepfamily dynamics. So if you can get out in front of it and try to figure out what you can do to try to mitigate some of that stress, it can make a big difference. All right, y'all are smart. You got it, the cooperative colleagues. And so to reiterate how to successfully be a cooperative colleague, both co-parents need to learn how to compartmentalize the relationship. So if somebody wants to try to talk about all this stuff in the past over and over again, you got to put some boundaries up. You've got to say, I know that you are still stuck on that, but that doesn't help us in our relationship as we are co-parenting our son together. I want conversation to stay around our kids. And we have to be the ones to bring that conversation back at times. Now, if there is something back here that really does need to be resolved, if there is some forgiveness piece that needs to happen, that's one thing. But if it's just somebody who constantly wants to go back to the drama, bring it back in and just say, hey, let's talk about Johnny and what is his schedule going to be for the Thanksgiving holidays? Because that's what we need to do. All right, so those are our categories. Let's move on. Goals of co-parenting and how we can practically live them out. If you were in the last workshop, you heard me talk about this a little bit. Focus on the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. If you've not heard the rest of the serenity prayer, it says, living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, taking this world as it is, not as I would have it, trusting that you will make all things right if I surrender to your will, so that I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with you forever in the next. So we are going to break this down. There's three pieces to the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. There's a lot of things and stepfamily life that we cannot change, especially in regards to our ex-spouse. So one of the consequences of divorce is we lose some power over our kids. It's just reality. When they go to another home, they're parented over here differently, and we can't control that, and we can't change that. Now, if it's unsafe parenting that is going on, certainly, we can have a say in that, and we can have conversation about that. But if it's just a matter of they're allowed to play video games way too many hours over here, we're going to lose a little bit of power about how much we can have to say about some of that. We can't control what they expose our kids to. We can't control the spiritual climate in that home. We can't control the behavior of our partner's former spouse. Maybe we don't like the ex-spouse's new wife or husband. We can't control that. We can't control what they expose them to. But, you know, we can learn to think about, are there things that we can try to change? Years ago, when my stepson was in his teenage years, he had a horrible time with allergies and asthma. And he was living with us at the time in Texas, actually. We were living in the Temple Belton area. And his mom lived up here in the Dallas area. So every other week, my husband would come and they would meet halfway and do a handoff with his son. And my son was really struggling. My stepson, I was taking him to the doctor all the time because he was having all kinds of sinus infections and allergies and asthma. And I really felt like some of it was because he was being exposed to cigarette smoke. And we knew that his mom and stepdad, he was in the car with them and, the windows up and being exposed to this. And I knew that this wasn't good for him. And I was talking to his pediatrician about it one time. And the doctor said, yeah, cigarette smoke is definitely an irritant for him. Let me write you a prescription that says he should not be around cigarette smoke. Okay, we took that. My husband took it. He gave it to his ex-wife and said, for the sake of Peyton, will you please be careful about smoking in his presence? Maybe consider walking outside your house. At least leave the windows down in the car if you're going to smoke, because he is sick all the time. Now, we couldn't control if she really did that or not. But we did our part to try to make a change to behavior that was affecting our son. And so those are the things that we've got to think about. We couldn't demand, if he came back to our house the next 2 weeks and he smelled like cigarette smoke again, we couldn't do anything about it. I mean, we could try to revisit that conversation, but it didn't mean that it was going to change. So do what you can. Pray for that a change will be made, that they will understand what you're trying to say, and then you're going to have to let go of it. But that is another part of the serenity prayer. Courage to change the things I can. So we can choose to change our behavior and how we respond, and then we have to let go of it. So a verse that I like, Romans 8, 5 through 6 on this says, those who are living according to the flesh set their minds on the things of the flesh, which gratify the body. But those who are living according to the Spirit set their minds on the things of the Spirit, His will and His purpose. The mind of the flesh is death, both now and forever, because it pursues sin. But the mind of the Spirit is life and peace, the spiritual well-being that comes from walking with God, both now and forever. If we set our minds on the things of the flesh, our sinful desires, we will end up disappointed. But if we ask the Holy Spirit to help us and set our mind on those things as we deal with the next spouse, then we can find peace and contentment. And the last part of the serenity prayer is the wisdom to know the difference. I think it was on this last slide. Yeah. So we need to seek wisdom from the Father. I talked about this in my previous workshop, James 1:5. If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault. Again, the story I told was about Solomon in 1 Kings 3. Solomon was a young lad when he took over as king. He knew that he could not manage his big job, and he asked for wisdom. We have to do the same thing in our co-parenting role. We need to ask for wisdom of how to manage, especially if this is a difficult ex-spouse. We have to sometimes just be still and pray and ask wisdom and maybe seek the godly counsel of other people to help us. All right, co-parenting goal number 2. Seek to maintain a cooperative relationship with your former spouse. Not one that's always tense and prickly. And this is where I think forgiveness can play a big role. If we harbor anger and resentment toward them, it's much harder to be cooperative and agreeable in issues with the kids. I heard a pastor say one time, unforgiveness is demanding that other people be perfect. That's a standard that you can't meet. None of us can. And for me, walking through unforgiveness with my former spouse was one of the hardest things I ever did. But when I finally realized I was only hurting myself by allowing myself to stay chained in this prison instead of the freedom and the peace that God could give me, then I stepped into a humility posture. I had to process it with a counselor, though, for me. I had to have somebody help me walk through because I felt like I had been hugely wronged. And my first husband chose addiction over his family, and I could not get past that. So you might need help. You might need a counselor. You might need a pastor. You might need a trusted friend that can help you if you're struggling with forgiveness. Now, let's talk a little bit about what forgiveness is and what forgiveness is not. Forgiveness is not denying that you've been hurt or that someone did bad to you. Forgiveness requires us to name it and say, that was wrong. You hurt me. You might not be able to say it to your former spouse immediately, And that's where you might need to say it to somebody else in the beginning. I have now been able to process this with my former spouse, but it was many, many years after the divorce, and he actually came to me and apologized first. And we were able to have a conversation where I said, yeah, you hurt me. I really struggled with unforgiveness, and here's why. But you may not be able to do that immediately after divorce or even in your relationship today. Forgiveness doesn't mean we automatically trust them again or that we're going to reconcile with them or that we're going to be perfect pals. We're not. Forgiveness is about the past. It's not about the future. Trust is about the future. And sometimes we need new behavior before we can trust again. But forgiveness means I'm going to let go of it. I'm not going to continue to let this stuff haunt me. I'm not going to let it affect my relationship with my former spouse. Because in order to co-parent well, we've got to let go of it so that we can begin to have interactions that are peaceful. Remember the why. It's for the sake of the kids. If we can remember the why, it's for the sake of our kids that we walk through forgiveness, that we do our part to become a cooperative colleague, then it's easier to do. It is possible to move beyond anger and pain to a positive and cooperative attitude in co-parenting. It's possible to have a strong parenting partnership, even though you didn't have a strong marriage. And you can shield children from these ongoing hurts that are caused by divorce. Does positive co-parenting happen naturally after divorce? No, it doesn't. It's going to have to be intentional, and it's going to require a lot of us. But it's worth it. It is well worth the effort. So every time you think, I can't do this, I can't, just remember, it's for the sake of the kids. And we're really keeping ourselves in prison if we hang on to unforgiveness. So get help if you need to. What does it look like to do our part toward a cooperative relationship? Work to reduce conflict, speak respectfully to the other home, about the other home. Kids internalize critical comments about their parent. Be careful what you say in front of the kids. Be very careful. If you say your dad is lazy in front of the kids, you're basically saying you're lazy. I mean, that's how that child is taking it. They are half of you and half of that parent. So be careful. Our language matters. When our kids were growing up, we all memorized Ephesians 4:28. It's all about don't let any unwholesome word come out of your mouth except that which is uplifting to others. And that includes a former spouse. I'm not saying that's easy, but we want to be uplifting. We don't want unwholesome words to come out. A very good book that I recommend if you need a co-parenting book is called Co-Parenting Works, Helping Your Children Thrive After Divorce. It's by Tammy Daughtry. So Tammy says children of divorce have one heart, but they live in two homes. One heart, two homes. So her book, Co-Parenting Works, is really good. What's her last name? Daughtry, it's D-A-U-G-H-T-R-Y. Tammy Daughtry. No, I don't think so. I added it later. Okay, yeah, we're about to get to that. Goal number three. One other thing I want to say, because we are heading into the holidays. As you say goodbye to your kids for the holiday, so let's say that they're going to go to the other house for a week. You want to be sure that you take all the emotions out as you say goodbye to them. It's just simply, bye, Sally. Have a great time at your dad's. I can't wait to see you when you get back. I'll talk to you along the way while you're over there. Love you. Kiss, hug, bye. It's kind of like, you know, when you took your child to kindergarten for the first time and you want to just cry as you dropped her off and you know that wasn't good for her because they're taking on our emotions. It's the same concept. If they see us so sad and we're going to cry, we're just making it harder for them. Keep the emotions out. If you need to go to your car and have a bawling fest, that's okay. Don't do it in front of your child. Keep the emotions out. And you can talk to them while they're there. You want them to know that you're okay with them going to that other parent's house. We need to do all we can for the sake of the kids. They have enough internal conflict going on. We don't want to contribute to that. So think about that as we head into the holidays. All right, second goal. No, Yeah, that was the second goal. Seek to maintain a friendly and cooperative relationship. Co-parenting goal number three. Recognize that a healthy co-parent is a stable person. How in the world is it 10:45? This, gosh, I'm going to have to talk really fast. Y'all are going to have to listen fast. Oh, thank you. Okay, that explains it. I can slow down. Man, I'm glad you told me that. All right, co-parenting three. Recognize that a healthy co-parent is a stable person. Practical details of co-parenting cannot happen smoothly in the midst of a toxic environment. So we need to be healthy ourselves. We need to do what it takes to be healthy ourselves. We need to figure out how to manage our stress so that everybody around us is not being affected by it. So, question, where is your focus? Do you think about the parenting in the other home too much? Are you too concerned about what's going on in that other home? Philippians 4:8. Finally, believers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable and worthy of respect, whatever is right and confirmed by God's word, whatever is pure and wholesome, whatever is lovely and brings peace, whatever is admirable and good repute, if there is any excellence, if there's anything worthy of praise, think continually on these things. Center your mind on them and plant them in your heart. So our behavior starts in our mind. It's all about where is our thinking? Because our thinking contributes to our behavior. I heard Dr. Charles Stanley recently say it this way. We sow a thought and we reap an action. We respond as a result of our thoughts. We sow an action and we reap a habit because we keep sowing the same action and it becomes a habit. We sow a habit and we reap a character because habits in our life determine our character. We sow a character and we reap a destiny. This is who we become. And you trace that all the way back and it starts in our thoughts. So if you need some help with your thinking, if you're struggling to get your thinking right, there's some good resources out there that I would encourage you to check out because bad thinking results in bad behavior and it just trickles downhill from there. So take care of you. Find a counselor if you need to. I've said that more than once, haven't I? Counselor, pastor, small group. We're going to talk about that at the end. All right, so practical issues that keep us stable as co-parents, perhaps wrestling with unforgiveness, co-parenting meetings in a public place. Have y'all ever noticed that people are more mature in public? So if you have an ex-spouse who tends to not be very mature sometimes and you need to do a handoff with him, try a public place. I've seen lots of handoffs in public places. You kind of can become attuned to them if you're in this season. I see them at McDonald's. I see them at the gas station. I see them at the mall. I see them at Target. You know, you can identify them. There's two vehicles that pull up together. They've got suitcases. There's parents and kids. Whoop, they exchange and they leave. It's not a bad idea. If you don't want them coming to your home, this is where I was. Did not want my ex-spouse coming to my home, so exchange would happen in a public place. It's not a bad idea. Congenial handoff with the kids, we talked about that. Self-care, be flexible. We're not always going to get our way with our dates. So if you haven't communicated about holiday dates yet, get on the stick. It's time. You got to get that figured out. And the sooner that you begin to talk about your Christmas plans, the better off everybody is. Because if you wait till the end and everybody's already got their plan set in stone, and then they think you just need to abide by what we've got in stone here, it doesn't go so well. So do it ahead of time, and it works better. Communicate effectively. Leave the kids out of adult decisions. So don't make the kids be the go-between in regards to communicating the schedule. And don't make the kids be spies in their home. So when they come back to your home, don't ask them 20 questions. What goes on over there goes on over there. The more you know about it, probably the worse off you are. So just let it go. Let the kids be kids. Heal yourself. Find a support network. Do what you need to do to be healthy. And recognize that just because somebody was a lousy spouse doesn't mean that they're a lousy parent. I've seen a lot of people really step up after divorce and become a really good parent. And so give them the benefit of the doubt. Encourage them to be a good parent. It's better for everybody if they can step up and be the parent that they need to be. So encourage that. Give them words that let them know you're going to trust them. You want to trust them as you're parenting your kids together. Where does our identity lie? You know, this can be a struggle sometimes. So let's say, for instance, you're a stepmom who came into this relationship, and there's a co-parent over here of your husband, the biological mom. She's undermining your relationship with the kids, and it's really disappointing for you, and it's hard for you to know what to do. I think as we understand that our identity lies in God, then it doesn't matter what somebody else thinks of us. Yes, it can wreak havoc on the kids. It can impact their relationship with us. We might need to pray for their heart that they will understand truth. But the reality is, when our worth as a person comes from God, then we don't have to seek it from another person. So remember that. When our worth comes from God, we don't have to seek it from another person. Titus 3, 4 through 7 says, we're loved and saved by God's mercy. We're heirs of God, which means that we're a person of surpassing value. We might need to remind ourselves of that at times. Co-parenting number 4, create and maintain healthy boundaries. I'm a big proponent of boundaries. The reason boundaries work is because they don't depend on someone else. They depend on us. So we put in place what works for us, and our desire to put limits in place in our co-parenting situation. So I gave you one earlier when I talked about a co-parent who constantly wants to bring conversation back to the kids, or not the kids, to the drama maybe of our past. They constantly want to bring this back up. We can be the ones to put boundaries in place about that. But, you know, there's other things sometimes. So when I began, well, right after my divorce, my ex-husband, so I was living in a rental house with the two girls, and my ex-husband still wanted to mow the lawn for me. Well, as a single mom, do you think I was going to complain about that? Yeah, okay, you can mow my lawn. I mean, sure. He continued to do that week after week. You know, he was manipulating me. I mean, I didn't see that at the time, but that's really what was going on there. And when I began to date Randy, my now husband, he said, Gayla, why are you still letting him mow your grass? And I said, because I don't want to mow it. And Randy said, I'll do it. Your ex-spouse does not need to be mowing your grass. And he was right. You know, my ex-spouse was still hanging on to, if I did all the right things for Gayla, maybe she will come back together. And that wasn't good for any of us, because that wasn't going to happen. So I had to be the one to put some boundaries in place and tell him, please stop mowing my grass. He didn't understand it, but it was okay because Randy started mowing my grass. You know, Galatians 5:22 talks about the gifts of the Spirit: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. All right, I said this in the last workshop. Is others control in there? Others control? No, self-control. In co-parenting relationship, we want others' control, but all we have is self-control. And, you know, there are a lot of things with co-parenting we can't control. We've talked about that. Also, consider if grace should be applied with your boundary setting. We don't want to be harsh. We want to always consider how it's going to be interpreted on the other side. So as we set boundaries, again, we're going to ask for wisdom and discernment. And God will give it to us as we work through these issues. Cooperative colleagues keep their relationship centered on everything that pertains to the kids and nothing more. Remember, compartmentalize your relationship with your former spouse. That's one of the biggest things that can keep the relationship healthy. All you need to be talking about are the kids. Now, are there exceptions to that at times? Yes. If there's an extended family member who is sick, for instance, that your ex-spouse had a relationship with, then they might need to know if this family member passed away. I mean, there's stuff like that that could go on. If you were married a long time to someone, that's common courtesy that you're going to let them know stuff like that. But let me give you a little encouragement here. So I started the workshop off by saying our in-laws are here to stay, which I was referring to our former spouse. But let me just tell you that I have probably in the last 10 years talked to my ex-spouse one time. Now my girls are grown. My girls are 30 and 33. And when they moved into their early 20s and they began to have really adult-to-adult relationship with their dad, I just didn't see that I still needed to be a part of that relationship. Now, if they need to talk to me, if they need a sounding board because dad's doing crazy things and they need to know how to handle it, yes, I'm all ears. I want to help them. But I don't need to talk to my ex-spouse. And I asked my girls, at some point I had to change my phone number and I said, please don't give this phone number to your dad. And they have honored that. And so it does come a time when the ex-spouse kind of goes to the background. Again, time. Time is on your side. We talked about this with building stepfamily relationships. I'm talking about it again with your co-parenting relationship. Time takes care of a lot of things. And so be patient. Don't give up too soon. Don't convince yourself that you can't do this. This is too hard. It's not forever. It's not forever. Again, Galatians 6:9. Don't grow weary of doing good, for at the proper time, you will reap a harvest if you don't give up. I've seen that. That's it. So I want to leave time for questions. And we've got 15 minutes. If y'all have questions about a former spouse, it doesn't just have to be a co-parenting question. There can be other things. It can be about stepfamily in general. I just did a workshop on building a successful stepfamily, so I'm open to help. I do want to mention, if you don't know Lori McGregor, so Kirk and Lori have a small group for blended families, and it is a lifesaver to be part of a blended family group. I really believe that saved our marriage in the beginning because it enabled me to be around other people that were walking a similar journey, and it was huge for me. So talk to Lori. I think there's something in the booklet in the back. It's on the Watermark website. You can find information. And honestly, y'all, this is a privilege that most churches do not have. The church that I'm in, there's not a blended family group. I've tried to start one. But it just, there wasn't the support that there could have been, and so it didn't take off. And so it is huge that this church is so supportive of ministering to blended families. So take advantage of that. All right, questions? Got one over here?
You had mentioned about sending your kid over as a spy or whatever into the other home. What if that's being done to you?
How old is the child?
12.
That's old enough that you can have a conversation and say, you know, I kind of feel like you're just asking questions because you want to carry that information back to your mom. And I'm not comfortable with that. Something like that.
He'll do it on... When he had a phone, he would record without us knowing.
Oh, that's the worst. So now you're more aware of it, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I would have a conversation with him. He is old enough to understand, and there's just no reason for it. So, and then just see if you can get him to talk about, is there a reason why you're needing to gain this information? Or like, does he do it where he's asking 20 questions or what? How have you identified that he's kind of being a spy?
It would just be at random times sometimes.
Yeah. If you're the biological dad, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So it needs to be a conversation between you and your son. Probably stepmom doesn't even need to be there. And just say, I'm really not comfortable with this. And, you know, we don't do this here. We don't ask of this in your other home. And I'm not comfortable with you doing it here. And I don't... If that doesn't go well and he has some allegiance to his mom, then you might even have to have a conversation with her at some point. I don't know how that relationship is. But that's, yeah, something else that you could try. Okay. Is that helpful?
Yeah. I might have another one.
That's fine.
Anybody? Okay. So our parenting styles are completely different. She has a completely different set of values over there than we do. She will, you know, allow him things that are way outside of his maturity, and then he'll bring them back to our house. And so we're always trying to manage that. Is there any tips that you would have for that? Things that are way mature, because he's the oldest. They're way too mature for the younger ones.
Yeah.
And he doesn't recognize that because he's allowed it, so he just thinks he can talk about it. So.
Yeah. So when my stepson was a teenager, some of this same stuff went on. And I remember very well one time he brought a video game that was rated M for mature audiences. Okay, he was not an M. He was not in that category. And so we immediately told him, we understand that you're allowed to do this at your mom's house, but you're not going to be allowed to do this here. And we took it from him for the weekend. We didn't win any brownie points that weekend. But we wanted him to understand there are different rules at our house than the rules at your mom's house. And we can't control what you're allowed to do at your mom's house, but we are going to have different rules here, and we do expect you to abide by them. And then you can even go on to say, we also have younger kids who we are setting an example for. And so... But regardless, even if you didn't have younger kids, we weren't going to let him play an M-rated video game at that time. But it was the same for us. We had our younger son who we were trying to shield him from. But here's the other thing. We could be a stricter parent to our younger son because he was an hours child. And so there were some things that the oldest son, certainly at his mom's house, was allowed. And we just had to let go of that. But we did ask him, watch your language when you're at this house. You know, there's certain things that we're not allowed to talk about, we're not allowed to say, and you may be allowed to say that over there, but you're not allowed to say that here. And we just tried to make him abide by the boundaries that we had in our home. And then the other thing is, you can kind of inoculate them in regards to when they are in your home, do as much as you can to install faith, have conversations, because that may be the only home that it's happening. And the truth is, they are impacted. I mean, we can't deny the fact that my stepson and my stepdaughter are neither one in church today. They are believers, but they are not in active church attendance. I think some of that is because they never went to church with their mom. It was not a priority. And so we can't deny that there is some influence over there. We are still praying for their heart. They know that we are very active in church and the benefits of that, and we will continue to pray for that. So,
you use the word values, and thank you. Would the same answers apply if gender identity and pronouns are being used differently in the biological dad's homes for one of the boys?
I'm not sure I can answer that. You know, there's a workshop tied to that here. I'm going to have to defer that you go to that. I just don't know that I'm qualified. I'm sorry you're dealing with that. That's a tough situation.
Probe Ministries here in Dallas. Are you familiar with Probe?
I don't live here.
They've been in place for 50 years, and so they go into classrooms and speak about creationism versus evolution.
Okay.
But they also have a lot on their website about transgender.
Okay.
And they're an excellent resource. It's probe, P-R-O-B-E.
Okay.
.org. and Ray and Sue Boblin, who are primary people with that organization. They're part of Watermark's church in Plano.
Oh, great. So that might even be another resource for you. Okay, there was a question on the front row.
Do you have tips for when children are realizing behavior by their dad and agreeing that it is wrong, and you're like listening to it and you want to like help them when those things happen, but not bad talk your mm-hmm. ex?
Mm-hmm. Okay, how old are the kids?
12 and 14. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's what always is going to determine our decision, not just their numerical age, but their maturity. More than likely, they are old enough to have some hard conversations. So my ex-spouse, because of his alcoholism, there is predisposition for both of my girls in regards to alcoholism. And when they became close to that age, probably a little 14, 15, and they began making comments, and I could see that they were realizing this behavior wasn't okay. And so I stepped in and I began to talk to them. I think that we can have conversations without bashing their parent, but keep it focused on the behavior and the detriment of the behavior that is going on. And so I was very open with my girls. And then even as they got older and began to question some things that their dad said to them, I even went on to tell them things like he was homeless for 3 years during their middle school years. I wouldn't have told them that at that time. They weren't ready to understand that. But as they became older and all of a sudden they're like, Mom, why doesn't Dad have a driver's license? Why does Dad buy stuff with food stamps when we're with him? And, you know, so more and more of the conversation they began to understand as they got older. And it's all a matter of how we frame it then, because it's hard. It's very hard when their parent is so unstable. And, you know, my former husband, he never got his medical license back. He never practiced medicine. And addiction has destroyed his life. And my girls need to know a little bit about that.
I have one more question, if that's okay.
Yeah.
I went through my ex-husband having an affair and remarrying the other woman and now having a baby. And my ex-husband is having my children call her mom. What is your, like, take on that in a stepfamily situation? Like, I think it is sickening, but, and they're doing it out of, like, fear of him, and it's not healthy.
Yeah. So sometimes what happens is when they're forced to do that in a situation like that, they might do that in their home, but I'm assuming that probably when they're in your home, they don't. Yeah, I mean, excuse me, I am never an advocate of that. I mean, the label that you call somebody is a term of endearment. So when someone calls somebody mom, that's a term of endearment that she has not earned at this point. Now, maybe at some point she would. I mean, my girls now do call my husband Randy dad, but that didn't start until their teenage years when he had been in their lives for 10 years. And there really was a term of endearment for him. But again, this is something that you probably can't control. I mean, have your girls talked to you about it at all?
I brought it up because I heard them like on a phone call. My ex-husband and his family live out of state, so I don't have to interact with them very much. But it's like pierces my soul. It's
sure.
Like so
of course
devastating.
It does. Yeah.
And so, but I have not had a conversation with him, like, but I feel like it would not come across, mm-hmm. like he's not going to be receptive of me saying something to him about it.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that's something that I would pray about and ask for wisdom, because it might be a conversation that you can have with him to just say, I feel like it's creating confusion for the girls to be forced to call her mom when she's not their mom and hasn't been in their life very long. But just know you're their only mom. I mean, don't let that feel threatening to you, because they know who their mom is. And but I understand how hard that is. Yeah, I don't think I have talked about that much, but it's really not healthy for us to try to force our kids to call a step-parent mom or dad. Now, if they reach that decision on their own and it becomes something that they want to do, that's fine. But that should never be forced. And we want them to be comfortable with whatever they want to call us. My stepchildren to this day call me Gayla. They don't call me mom. They have a mom. She died. And for them to call me mom, you know, it just wouldn't go over well. So, yeah, I'm sorry that's happening. But I can tell you that as they get older, they may eventually decide, well, why do we have to do this? I mean, I don't have to be told. When they get up into those upper teenage years and kids just kind of start pushing the boundaries, they might just decide, oh, I'm done calling her mom. She's not my mom. I mean, you just never know. So, yeah. All right, we got 3 minutes. I can probably take one more question. If nobody has one, I'm going to assume I answered all your questions and you know everything you need to know about co-parenting, right? How to co-parent well. So let me encourage you, go out there and do it with Christ's love. Did I mention the cards on your chair? So there is one that has two-sided. On one side, it talks about Blended and Blessed, which is an event for blended families happening next April at a church in McKinney. I highly recommend you come to this. We do these events all over the United States, and it just happens to be in Dallas this year. So Family Life, the organization I work with, we're coming. Ron Deal and I will both be speaking. There'll be other speakers at the event, and it is a day dedicated to step couples. It's like $20 a person, and that includes lunch. So it's a great deal. So look that up. On the other side is Women in Blended Families. That is a monthly live stream that I do every second Tuesday of the month at 3 p.m. Central. You can find it on the Family Life Blended page, on Twitter, on YouTube. We talk about a variety of subjects. We talked about co-parenting back in July. In fact, you could go to YouTube and look up Family Life Blended, and you'll find all the Women in Blended Families that we have done now for about a year. The one, I think it's like last July, I had Tammy Daughtry on there, the gal that I just recommended her book, and we talked about co-parenting. So that would be a good one for you to listen to. But particularly, you women in blended families, join me. We talk about all things related. This Tuesday with Michelle Cachette is going to be about finding hope in the trenches. So join me. Okay, thank y'all for coming. I think the next workshop in this class is about single parenting, so probably doesn't pertain to you, or it might if you're a co-parent, actually. But go find whatever your next class is. Get you a snack. You have 15 minutes. Thank y'all for coming. Talk to Lori if you want to information about a small group.